Talakonikova Samutsevich and Alyokhina have committed hooliganism. There is a serious breach of public order, expressing an unconcealed disrespect for society, motivated by religious hatred and enmity, and by hatred of a particular social group, committed by a group of people under a premediated agreement.
6 months after their controversial performance at Moscow's Christ the Savior Cathedral, three members of the feminist punk rock collective Pussy Riot, Maria Alokhina, Yekaterina Samutsevich, and Nadezhda Tolokonikova, received two-year prison sentences today for hooliganism motivated by religious hatred. The verdict and sentence came just after the 100-day mark of President Vladimir Putin's third term and highlights the fact that the Kremlin leader is in no mood to tolerate dissent, despite mounting discontent in society. A new poll, meanwhile, shows Putin's approval rating falling to the lowest level of his presidency. The Pussy Riot verdict, what does it say about Russia's political direction? Hello, and welcome to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobudin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. Welcome, Kirill. It's been a long day.
Hello.
We were originally planning to give the podcast a break this week, but given the amount of time we've spent covering this story on various platforms, there was just no way we were going to be silent on the podcast today. Kirill, let's get right to it. What's your initial reaction to today's verdict? 2 years is less than the prosecutors were asking for, but there was speculation before the trial that they might have gotten a suspended sentence. How do you interpret what happened today?
I never believed in suspended verdict, and when I heard or read in the Twitter translation about the verdict, my first thought was, it's kind of metaphorical way. This process, this trial and this verdict is a kind of button undo on a great computer called Russia. It's undone most of the things that had been established in the previous 20 years and maybe in the previous, 80 years from the October Revolution.
I'm going to let you go on this one.
Yes. What had been undone by this decision? First of all, that was a total failure of the state, of Russian Federation as a state, of as a, state mechanism, and the idea of the post-Soviet Russia. I can explain.
Okay.
What,
I'm interested in where you're going here.
This decision destroyed a very important principle of the separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. This principle had been established not by post-Soviet Russian rulers Yeltsin and Putin. This principle had been established by a February Revolution of 1917. Mm-hmm. During this time, from February to October 1917, this principle led to the returning of an independent Russian Orthodox Church with a patriarch as a head of this church. So the independency of Russian church is based on the idea of this separation of church and state into during Russian and then Soviet and then post-Soviet history. Mm-hmm. And this one simple case, because as itself this case is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's evidently simple. So this absolutely simple case could, destroy this line between border between state and the church.
But who's the tail and who's the dog here? Do you see this as a situation where the church influenced the state to do something it wanted, or is that the state is using the church for its political purposes, or both? Who's wagging whom here?
I think that was a mutual, very grave political and ideological mistake. I'm excluded from my explanation of the discussion, the moral or, all the moral terms and discussions and terms and so on. We're speaking about the politics. And,
yeah. But who's the driving force here? Is it the church or is it the
state?
At the
same time, that I'm absolutely sure that this mistake began at the same time from two various sides.
Uh-huh.
Someone, I can't name him because I don't know correctly, someone from, church hierarchy called to someone in, presidential administration mm-hmm. In February, maybe in March, and told him, so we have to do something with this. Mm-hmm. We are asking to do this. And then that was kind of, someone in the presidential administration, sent a kind of signal to the
law enforcement.
Yes. And then the process began.
Mm-hmm.
When they began the process, they, of course, in their nightmares, they couldn't imagine what will happen with all these things. And when the process began and all this resistance began and when all this public scandal began and especially during the prolonging of this of the arrest of Pussy Riot mm-hmm. members during the investigation mm-hmm. and so on, the irritation, first of all, it was just an irritation of Russian society, of part of Russian mm-hmm. society. Then this irritation became protest. Huge mm-hmm. protest.
You and saw now, the crowds outside yes, the courtroom yes. chanting, "Where is your conscience?
Yes.
Where is your
and
conscience?"
And now what we saw today, just a few minutes ago, it was hate. Mm. It was just hate. And this is a very important and very dangerous thing as for state and the same time for the church. And this is a grave political mistake. This is my first point. Secondly, this case shows the inefficiency of the state machine, including the state propaganda machine. Mm-hmm. They failed this propaganda war. All these, polit technologists, all these official TV channels, all these, official media like newspapers and so on, they lost the battle to 3 young women without any, resources and financial.
Not only that, if you look, let's take Russia Today, for example, RT, which is supposed to be the external voice of Russian media to the world. They were covering this from a very sympathetic perspective from these three women's side. If you look at Russia Today's coverage, it was very, very pro-Pussy Riot, as it were. That's part of the state media machine. And so it tells
media machine consists of people.
Yes.
And that's the question.
But it tells me that the machine is hardly united on this matter. Even the state television
machine is
not united on this matter.
It's because of church. It's because of choice. It's not because of, something is against Putin or against, Sechen and so on. The problem with all these relationships between Russian people, Russian citizens and the church is much more serious than their attitude to, Putin himself or Sechen mm-hmm. himself or, Surkov himself or Nemtsov himself, etc., etc., etc. Because we saw there on the first stage of this process the intrusion of the church with all this archaic language and image into the everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very irritating, even for those who work for official news mm-hmm. channels and so on. And we have to understand this. But those who ought to understand this by their position as, bureaucracy or some politicians around Putin and Putin himself, they cannot understand even this thing.
Mm-hmm. So what does this bode going forward? What does this, as I said at the outset, it shows that Putin himself and those closely around him are in no mood to tolerate any dissent in his new term. But yet, if you look at those scenes outside the courtroom, it looks like a good chunk of society is not in any mood to take this. Where do you see this going?
I think that began as we told, as a very serious political and administrative mistake.
Mm-hmm.
This Pussy Riot case began, I think, one of the most important and serious failures of this third Putin's presidency, and it will mark this presidency. Whatever or however then the events will go on about Pussy Riot and any other case. So Putin's presidency began with, first of all, demonstration and riots and rally of the 6th of May. Then it was inauguration is absolutely empty, Moscow and Kremlin. And the third thing is three young, intelligent, beautiful young women who had been accused and then sent to prison for who knows what for.
Something that struck me as I was watching the verdict being read and the reading of the verdict itself was almost a metaphor for this whole case, because they read it forever. They had the three of them standing in handcuffs throughout this, in this obvious attempt to humiliate them. The case dragged on ridiculously. They kept them in pretrial detention much longer than normal. But what struck me was the three of them were smiling. They kept smiling, and it wasn't the nervous smile of somebody smiling when they're... It was a very sincere, very honest smile, each one of them. And it was something that really struck... What did you read? Did you read anything into that? Because they knew what was coming. They didn't have any illusions they were going to walk out of that courtroom free today. Even though some in the press may have had illusions that they were going to... I don't think they had any illusions. What did you read into their demeanor when this was coming down?
I can't.
But strike you?
Yes, it strikes me. And the thing that I was thinking, looking at all this scene, is that this is we spoke about the failures of the state, failures of the church, and now I can say about the failure, a very serious failure of Russian opposition. These three young women, they could reach, and they reached the aim which all this opposition, including Boris Nemtsov, whoever, Garry Kasparov, Sergei Parkhomenko, and so on, they never reached such aims, such public support, not just inside Russia but outside, also outside Russia and so on. This is one of very important things about the politics itself as field of human behavior. So you can use an external force, you can use whatever you money, power, media and so on, but if you are absolutely aware about what they are doing, and that if you decide that you are going to the end, it's very important. You cannot do the revolution, any revolution, doing something else in the meantime. If you want to reach your goal, you have to reach your goal anyway, paying any price for this. And this is the distinction between this girl, this young woman, and most of the opposition leaders. They try to be politicians, kind of as a freelancer, politicians. There are just few real professional politicians in Russian opposition. Sergei Udaltsov, for instance, he is also one of those who can go to the end. In his struggle. And that's why...
Navalny,
yes. This is a new generation of opposition leaders and opposition activists. But if Navalny, even Navalny, Udaltsov and so on, they focus on the struggle with, personally Putin, or with the corruption in the system and so on, these three young women, they refuse all this state of mind, which is the basement or foundation of the Putin's regime.
Which, and they said, we're more free than any of you, what they said in their closing statement.
And that's why I think they are more, free than any of, and more successful than any of opposition leaders now in Russia.
So we
they envy them.
We are now in the era of Pussy Riot. This is what I hear you saying.
Yeah.
They are defining this time right now. Will this last is another question, but they're very much defining this period.
I'd like to be more, humble, modest. I'd like to say that we are in from the beginning of this year. We are watching the beginning of a new political era in Russian history, especially in the relationships between the society and the state, first mm-hmm. of all. Now we see a new stage in the relationship between the society, state, and the church.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the third point is that we see a new kind of relationship, a new kind of opposition leaders, a new, quality of opposition mm-hmm. Movement itself. So it's all these things are very important. Don't forget that all this Pussy Riot, so-called punk band and so on, this is a contemporary, as we told in the previous, discussed in the previous podcast, this is a project of contemporary artists.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how this distant, as everyone thinks about this distance area like contemporary mm-hmm. art, began to, be influential in the political
yeah.
field.
Yeah, that is. It's not new, but it's new for this time.
For Russia, this is absolutely new. It's new for Europe when Europe had its 1968, and it's not new for United States, but it's a new thing for Russia. And on this stage of our discussion, I can say that as a result of this trial, it's a very strong expression, but I have to say this. Russian Orthodox Church now seems like is being buried under its history and under its archaism, under its archaic history.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, Russian opposition began, to play with the modern agenda, because feminism and so on,
yeah.
it's a part of modern agenda. It's not a part of previous agenda,
right.
which had been played by old-style Russian opposition.
Right. No, they're playing a new game, that's for sure. In a few moments, we'll continue our discussion of the Pussy Riot verdict, its fallout, and its political implications. I'd like to remind you that you have been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. I'd also like to remind you, you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You can read the Power Vertical blog at RFERL.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. Demonstrators outside the courtroom chant, "Where is your conscience?" Pyotr Virzilov, the husband of Telikonikova, came out and made a very brief statement to reporters after the verdict was handed down today. He said that his only comment is that the title of the new song that was released by Pussy Riot today, "Putin is fanning the flames of revolution." And he said, that's the end of my quote. That's all I have to say. Is that over the top, or do you think that's on the mark?
I can think in such terms, like a revolution and so on. It's up to Virzilov. this is a very important point, as we previously said.
Yes,
and this is a very important point for the future. Because with all the obstacles and all the situation around this Pussy Riot case, this case is not just now is over. I think they will appeal the verdict and so on. But this is the end of political season, Russian political season, winter spring and to some extent summer 2012. And in 2 or 3 weeks, a new political season will begin. This is a season autumn-winter. And the beginning, the very beginning of the season is two things. So it begins with two things. First of all, it's understanding that we are not we are, but the Russian citizens, they live in into or inside their third Putin's term. Because the previous political season was all about elections and post-electoral activity and
it's
so on.
It's almost a transition between
transition and so on. Now, all of them, all Russian people, understand that we are living inside Putin's third term. And all the next gestures or measures or, you know, acts and so on, either by the state or by the opposition, will be founded or will be reasoned by this thing, that they are now inside this third term and they behave in these limits.
And today's verdict kind of puts an exclamation point on that. And yes. This is really, this is kind of like the marker.
Yes. I think that the result of this will be, or maybe should be, a more, you know, more serious struggle, more serious political, you know, claims, and more serious political crisis in Russia in the till the end of this year. Because if a lot of people, especially liberal or westernized or, you know, people in the beginning, on the maybe in the middle of this year in Russia, who were not support opposition, but were rather critical to the regime, will play on the opposition side.
Yeah, there's about 40% that are like this, that their support for Putin is very soft.
It's very soft. Moreover, sorry for interrupting you, but it's not just Levada Center opinion poll. It's the same the same numbers of the opinion poll of FCOM, the Center of Public Opinion.
Well, if you compare the last couple of polls, I mean, the Putin's numbers are down to 48% in the latest Levada Center poll. That's 12% down from the last time they took a poll. Yeah. And in the last Levada Center poll, they broke down the Putin support and found that the real hardcore support was about 15%, 15 to 20. But the soft support, which was about 40, they wanted Putin to be different. They wanted a different Putin. They didn't want Putin to rule the same way he ruled in his first stint in the Kremlin. They wanted him to rule a little bit more like Medvedev ruled between 2008 and 2012.
Who knows?
And we see some of that support already peeling off because Putin's numbers dropped about 12% down to 48%. It's the first time I've seen his numbers below 50%. Beyond that, we got local elections coming up in the fall. The opposition is holding primaries to elect this, which is going to hold a 45-member kind of council to oversee the activities of the unified opposition. Navalny just put a video out on this last week explaining how it's going to work, and it's, you know, it's going to include nationalists, leftists, and liberals. This is an interesting little experiment. That's important, I think. You'll have this.
And the economic situation will
worsen.
The economic
situation will worsen. Yeah. The economic and social situation will worsen. Big, very painful social reforms are in the offing come autumn. But overshadowing it all is today's verdict and the message from the Kremlin that we plan to play tough.
Not just tough. This message includes not just tough. The second point, maybe it's the first point, forget about the modernization.
Yeah, well, when was the last time we heard that word?
Yes, you know? Just forget, because we are the state who destroyed all the separation between state and church, and even the judge can quote, you know, some of the documents of the Orthodox Church meetings in the 4th or 5th century.
Yeah, no, if you read the indictment itself,
It's very strange, and claiming that, you know, forget about the modernization, they close their own future. because all this rhetoric of the previous Putin's terms, well, it's about a new Russia, high-tech Russia, whatever, strong but high-tech at the same time. And now we just understand that high-tech and strong, absolutely different things.
Right.
So he prefers strong to...
Or at least his version of strong is
different. Yes, and this strongest is, first of all, very archaic, and secondly, very dangerous, not just for Russia itself as a state, but for Russian society, moreover, especially for the urbanized class, middle class, creative class, and whatever. So he is losing the support even of those people who are absolutely apolitical. 1 year ago, those who just wanted to go on the recent situation and so on, because the situation is worsening.
Yes. Now, Russia's joining the World Trade Organization next week, and that's going to create additional economic pressures. They're going to be open to more competition from overseas than from abroad than they've ever really had before. So you add that into the mix, which should be a modernized, that could be a modernizing factor. Or not. We don't know how that's going to play out. One thing I did want to touch on, going back to the Pussy Riot verdict today, is how much influence do you think the support from people from Madonna to Paul McCartney to started with Faith No More and Mike Patton, but this thing, there were demonstrations around the world today at Russian embassies. Yeah. How much did you, if at all, did this influence the outcome?
I don't know how it did directly, but I'm sure that that was a very, very strong influence, but in some special way. I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, Putin and all his aides found themselves in the dead end. They really didn't know what to do with all this Pussy Riot case. In some sense, maybe they were ready just to set them free and to forget about the case. But all this international support, it's strange, but all this international support maybe led the state or Putin or whoever to the decision that they... this young woman had to have to receive a real prison terms. I think
you think it may have so it may have hurt their
yes hurt I think so. It's not about that this international support was counterproductive. It was very productive, very productive and very efficient. But in some sense, pragmatically, all these things they irritated Putin himself. We know very good his psychology, his psychological, you know, landscape, mental landscape of Vladimir Putin, and we all of us know now who is Mr. Putin.
He's very nervous.
He's very vulnerable. Yes, and he reacts not as a real politician. It's very interesting. But as a, you know, private person, he reacts psychologically, not politically.
Well, his reputation in St. Petersburg, when I worked in Petersburg as a journalist in the 90s and he was vice mayor, he was known as being very vindictive. Very vindictive. And he has a long memory. Put it that way. He's known as that. And, you know, going back to December and January, I can remember one of our first couple podcasts, we talked about how we've never really seen Putin vulnerable before that time period. We saw Putin rising.
Yeah.
We saw Putin at the peak of his power. But we never saw the Putin that was in trouble politically, that was falling, that was not in control of the situation. And it was really uncharted territory, and I didn't know what to expect. Now we're beginning to see...
I think the first sign of this state that he is very vulnerable was the Khodorkovsky case.
Although that came at the peak of his power.
There were some, of course, political aims in this process. We know all about this. But at the same time, he is, I am totally agree, he's very vindictive.
Yeah.
And he never forgave Khodorkovsky some, you know, meetings and schemes, some humiliations.
His comments about Khodorkovsky's corruption during that Kremlin
Not
meeting.
Not just about corruption, his ambitions, political ambitions, yeah. that he never saw Putin as a really strong political figure, and so a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
That was his first sign of his, vulnerability. First of all, and that was his first real political mistake. Khodorkovsky case was first real, very serious.
At the time, it looked like, from a political perspective, it looked successful at the time.
Yes, if all these discussions around Khodorkovsky case will, finish in 2005 or 2007 and so on.
Yeah.
So now Khodorkovsky case is a very powerful part of political agenda about Putin. And now another more powerful thing is Pussy Riot case.
Yeah.
So he is... going or coming from one political mistake to another. He was very successful in some sense in the 2000s, but now we see the situation that he's a leader of archaic, mute Russia, and he is opposed by modern, very talkative and very, very loud Russia. No, Russian society is divided.
Yeah, no, Russian society is divided. But another thing that Putin has lost is he's lost all of his soft power. He still has his hard power.
Yeah.
He still has the full weight of the Russian state to go after his enemies, as these three women learned today. But he's lost all his soft power. They're not controlling the conversation. They're not they don't
He's
have,
just reacting.
He's just reacting. Yeah. But there's no soft power. There's one more thing I wanted before we wrap up. There's one more thing I want to discuss. There's another high-profile criminal case potentially looming, and that's the case against Navalny.
And today, or yesterday, Navalny sued Bastrykin and so on about all these accusations about Czech residency and so on. So there are two.
Right, but the one that the state can bring, the one against Navalny, the case in Kirovsky Oblast.
Yes.
Do they go ahead with this out? Does what happened with the Pussy Riot trial, what does that tell you? Are they going to go out? Are they going to double down and go after Navalny too? Or
I don't know.
Of course,
because
we
can speak from the point of view of common sense, common political sense, and as all these events around Pussy Riot case revealed, that there is no any common political sense now in Kremlin, so we can't predict. I don't know, really, because this Navalny trial after Pussy Riot case, this thing could, destroy everything in Putin's regime, in the Putin's third term regime, because so he will destroy absolutely international reputation, first of all.
Yeah, I'm not sure he has much farther to go on that.
Yes, but this regime is based on the possibility of high bureaucracy to keep their property, to keep their money, and
abroad.
To keep their families abroad. And any real international scandal and any real international gestures against Putin's regime will follow by,
You mean freezing assets? You mean not?
Yes,
Visa restrictions, things like that.
So they don't want to live in Belarus.
Right, and they seem to be moving in that direction. But if you look at, again, you look at the scene outside that courtroom today, and you get a sense of how much society has changed.
Such things could happen inside Kremlin if the things will go on in this direction.
But the fact that they were willing to give Pussy Riot prison sentences, does that suggest to you that they're going to go after Navalny?
My answer is I don't know, really. I don't know, because we can speak, as I told you, we can speak on the basis of common sense. We can discuss the things from the point of view of, real politics and political common sense. Now we see a very huge violation of this common sense. And I don't know what will be in, you know, 2-3 weeks inside Kremlin, because they need to heal all these wounds.
Right. And again, along the same lines, what will happen inside the whole elite, not just the Kremlin, the elite is, again, I've said it a billion times, but it's divided. And this case, again, shows a divided elite.
Yes, I read, for instance, a tweet, you know, a lot of tweets by various, you know, groups of representatives of Russian society today during their mm-hmm. trial and the verdict and so on. Everyone, including nationalists, liberals, you know, those who supported Putin, even the journalists who supported mm-hmm. Putin, they are absolutely furious. They're absolutely furious, and I'm absolutely sure that this wound couldn't be healed.
Well, on that note, we'll wrap up. Today's podcast was just pretty much a snap analysis, because this all came down literally an hour ago or so. I'd like to remind you that you have been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFURL. In the studio with me has been my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFURL's Russian service. Thanks for coming in to do this on a very long day, Kirill.
Thank you.
And, I'd also like to thank our producer, Tanya Kancheva, who is back from a well-deserved vacation. I'd also like to remind you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, you can read the Power Vertical blog at rfurl.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. Join us again next week. And now I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noize MC.